Senate will come to order. Reports from standing committees.
February the 22nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 211, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 22nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 209, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 22nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 206, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hines, Johnson, and Martin. No, Senators Case and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. House Bill number 1. Standing Committee Report. Your Committee Number 2 on Appropriations has reviewed House Bill 1 pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1, little e, 1 and 2. The following lists are provided, suspending with the reading. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
In accordance with Joint Rule 14-1F1, House Bill 1 is referred directly to third reading. House Bill 1, third reading of the bill.
House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations 2, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government. Sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Nicholas.
What, you said no amendment?
Go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I'd like to go ahead and explain what you have in front of you folks. You have in your red folder three different documents. One document is a spreadsheet that we sort of call a cheat sheet. The other is the Standing Committee Report. And the third set of documents are the adopted House amendments. So what we'll do is the Standing Committee Report that has my signature on it explains what the identical amendments are and then the non-identical amendments. And then if you want to actually look at the amendment, you would look at it at the handout that has adopted House amendments, and they'll be in numerical order beginning second reading number 32, all the way to a third reading. The easiest way to explain it, however, is to go off of the what we generally describe as the cheat sheet, which is the 8.5 by 14-inch paper. And we begin by the identical House amendments. The identical amendments that ended up on both houses, there was the cleanup amendment, adding the Select Committee on Air Transportation to the recipients, to the report recipients was identical. The extended reversion language in public television was identical. The China and Silver Amendment, you'll recall that was the $10,000 amendment. That was identical. There was an identical footnote for Livestock Board for computerization and the G forms. There was an identical amendment to for the Capcom for the Safeway Level 1 and 2 design. I think that was the public to have a public hearing. Identical movement or amendments removing the SPRAW tip rent prevention. That was, you'll call, the last budget had a provision that the stopped the tipping from the spending policy reserve account next summer. Both houses removed that language preventing the tip. Both houses adopted the language that provided that A&I would construct the STEM building in Laramie instead of the University of Wyoming. And both houses put in the amendment that took the $25 million out of the A&I reserve account for the Department of Health and moved it actually into its budget with corresponding federal revenues. Both houses adopted the Casper College, University of Wyoming, $32 million footnote cleanup. And both houses adopted the municipal waste landfill account that sets aside $15 million to future obligations to begin addressing or setting aside the money to address those facilities. So those are the identical amendments. Now we drop down to the non-identical amendments. In most instances, you're going to recognize some of these or all of these amendments because they were, in many or most instances, presented to this side of the House. The first one would take the $3 million of general fund and backfill the highway fund for road construction for the ethanol tax credits that fell in the Senate, passed in the House. You'll recall that there was a $2 million proposal that was presented in the Senate and rejected for the rural hospital technology critical access grants that failed here but passed in the House. The $10 million for the locals ultimately is the same. There's a little bit of difference, not enough to put in. I don't think there's really any difference, but you recall the Senate first put it into CapCon and then put it back into the municipal funding, the direct distribution, so that while they look like they actually are, in fact, identical, but they got there different ways. Ranch A, there was a couple, they're identical except that there are a couple words dealing with paragraph reference, so that'll be a technical issue that we'll address during the conference. There was a $1 million proposal for grants to Southeast Wyoming mineral-affected communities for their fire districts that failed in the Senate, passed in the House. The CWC Health Science Center and the Big West Academic Center, those ultimately passed in both houses. We just make, they'll need to be addressed differently. Part of what happened here is that we adopted in a division, and they'd adopted in one, so that in the end they were at the same place. It's just technically cleaning it up. They added a footnote to tourism to specify spending in established markets. The JAC had recommended two markets with a set amount of money. I think on the House there was amendment to direct all that money to one market. Didn't change the amount, but changed the direction of it. I think what they apparently, the sponsor of that amendment had learned that the recommendation from tourism is that instead of splitting up the money for two markets, it ought to be put in together one. On the House side, there was a correction to extend the time for which there was a $200,000 appropriation made for sex offender treatment in the original budget, and the sponsor of that amendment put in a provision to extend that for the appropriation for an additional year because the dollars apparently not been spent. That footnote was not presented on our side. The UW reporting requirements, adding the joint education reporting recipient list, there were just minor changes, but both houses adopted it, but we needed to reconcile some language. The Veterans Cemetery Bridge requirements, folks from Casper, you might take a look at that, and one of the Casper representatives on the other side had put a provision that the funding for the cemetery bridge would be tied to a would not be expended until there is a memorandum of understanding between Evansville and the military department. You might want to take a look at that. As we had understood during the hearings with JAC was that no one else relied on the bridge or the road, and now apparently Evansville has a horse in the race, and I'm not sure whether we want to, how we feel about that MOU. So you may want to take a look at that third reading, amendment number 5, and on the House side, take a look at that. Make sure you let the conference committee know your views of that. The health care financing rebasing requirements, you recall, that was presented on this side. It was rejected. It was adopted on the House side. The Northwest Community College District project had both had a cleanup amendment, but apparently the amendments had a little bit different language on the House and the Senate side, so we'll sort that through. The Secretary of State user-friendly interface footnote, that's a footnote that they adopted requiring that the Secretary of State modify its web page based upon comments received during the election from users, whoever those users are. I suppose we know, kind of like teachers, we know who they are. We'll assume that when they know who it is. On the DEQ, they did put in 2 full-time positions into DEQ land quality. That was rejected on this side. The recapture interest local resource footnote, that is the footnote, that's the amendment that failed on the Senate. So what ends up happening with respect to that issue is the Senate adopted an amendment that would require any district that's borrowing money to pay 6% interest on the money, but rejected the recapture or the interest. Let me restate that. One House adopted the language that says that if you have recapture money and you generate interest on it, that's considered a local resource. That was on the House. We rejected that. On the Senate side, we provided a provision that when the recapture districts borrow money, they have to pay 6% interest. And that was rejected on the House. So we have the opposite positions. We'll need to sort through that. The areas where we had Senate positions with money, this is not all the differences, but you recall we put in $3 million for the, or we reduced $3 million the railroad quiet zone reductions. That did not pass in the House. We have funding for the DD waivers. That was not adopted in the House. We had $1 million for the governor's mansion land acquisition, not adopted in the House, and $100,000 for health education grants. It was not passed in the House. I don't have the calculations, but the staff has done added all the differences and divided them in half, and if you do that, we end up right between the middle of the our spending level and the House spending levels. If you turn your attention to the golden rods, you can see how this is all played out and profiled. And it's profiled if you begin to look at the budget bill appropriations are on underneath expenditures, the second line, and you can see the difference between our expenditures and theirs. They're $245 million in their budget bill. We're $239 million. And then you've got $24 million from bills with appropriation. And ultimately, what that does is affect that line that has a 7 by it, which is the 2010 and 2011 budget bill, budget reserve account transfer to the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, the LISRA account. So because the House spent more money, they're only able to transfer $3.7 million to the LISRA account. The Senate, which was always and continues to be more conservative, is able to transfer $9.4 million to the LISRA account. That's the principal area where you see the profiles differences. I want to make sure that I check one page on this morning's. All right, so now what happens is that you turn over on the page 2, general fund. You can see the bills with appropriations, and those may change as days go through. Over on page 3, under budget reserve account, you'll see the reduction for the $15 million that's transferred over to the I've got two golden rods that I'm comparing against, but the $15 million reduction for the municipal landfill account, that's shown on page 3 under 2011 budget bill appropriations. So you can see that there's a $15 million deduction there. And that reflects now over on the last page, on page 6, now you'll see down at the bottom the Campbell County Regional Waste Supply Development account, and that shows you the total amounts that are there, which include the budget bill and the transfer in of AML funding. So that's how that's going to profile. I don't think that it's important at this time to take you through the rest of the golden rod. Those are just the biggest items that I reflected over as I looked at the golden rod and the changes that have been made. Mr. President, I think that's a good time to take questions if there are any.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions of Chairman Nicholas, Mr. Vice President? I'll wait just a little bit here so you get a chance to look back again. Senator Landon.
Mr. President, thank you. I'm not sure that this is appropriate, but I'll throw this out, that I have spoken with the mayor of that small community up in central Wyoming, and apparently there has been quite a few discussions had over the amendment that was passed on the other side, and that revolves around maintenance. The community of Evansville has already agreed to take care of that road, and so apparently it sounds like the concern expressed by the representative on the other side, I think those concerns have been met. So, I thought I would throw that out at this time. Thanks.
Other comments or questions in regard to House Bill 1? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm just trying to find I thought it was on page 6, the money for the landfills of $15 million. And that was going to be appropriated similar to Campbell County Regional Water Supply. I know you mentioned it on pages 3 where the money comes out under budget bill appropriation, but I thought we were going to have a separate showing of it on the goldenrod.
Go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, we are. In fact, I've got another one that's got a red sheet on it. And you don't have it, but the staff are a bunch of comedians. They put fiscal profile Phil's secret pots of money. Bunch of comedians. So apparently it's profiled on a red sheet that only Phil gets to keep track of. We will ultimately get it there as soon as the red sheet goes from being secret to non-secret. It's a secret shared by me and my 30 closest friends.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I did have a question with regard to the one footnote that was added on the other side related to our tourism budget. I just have a curiosity for our Appropriations Committee. I know you receive a lot more testimony than we do. It's just a curiosity more than anything else as to why we would be dictating. It seems like they're the professionals that know how to spend that money and know how to market this state. And, for us to dictate what markets, it's just a curiosity. I guess I'd like a little more on that one. Thank you.
Are there other questions? I'm not going to hold the chairman strictly to 2 times in regard to this budget, but if there are other questions, you can keep him from jumping up and down. Guess there aren't any right now. Senator Nicholas, would you like to speak to that?
I was doing 2 things at the same time. I think the question is, what did we hear with respect to the tourism and the two markets? And what had been recommended was that by the tourism is that I want to say it's about $3 million a market, $3 to $5 million. Don't hold me those numbers, but two additional markets, one in the going to Dallas, and one was going back to Seattle. And we had recommended a reduction in half of each of those, and I think that the director had gotten with the chairman on the other side of the House Appropriations and made a discussion and concluded that what they would rather do is take all the money and hit one target area instead of saturate one market instead of half saturating two markets. So we'll listen to see what they have to say. I mean, ultimately, the I just know that's what the discussion was during the conference. We'll find out more about the rationale and whether it has merit or not. Probably doesn't, but maybe we'll be drugged down that area.
Other questions or discussion in regard to House Bill 1?
Well, as long as they talk to the director,
There being no further discussion on House Bill 1 in accordance with Joint Rule 14-1G and Joint Rule 14-1H1 and 2, House Bill 1 is referred directly to a conference committee of five members from each House to meet and to resolve the differences between the Houses with respect to both budget bills, Senate File 1 and House Bill 1. And I would appoint to the conference, the Budget Conference Committee, Nicholas, Meyer, Peterson, Von Fladen, and Hastert. Go back and talk to those members of the House. Before we move further in our agenda, I think we'll deal with some concurrences here. Senator Case, are you ready in regard to message number 299?
Yes, Mr. President, I am. Thank you.
We'd ask that be read in at this time.
February the 11th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 299, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 3, Campaign Finance Organizations. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Case, would you like to speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. President, for the leeway this morning. This is a substantial amount of amending that went into this bill. If you recall, this bill is Senate File 3. It's campaign finance reporting. It's the one that we need to change our laws to allow the independent expenditures by corporations and other entities to exercise their free speech rights in compliance with a Supreme Court ruling that took place in late 2009. The gist of this bill, this was a committee bill, and the committee put forward a proposal to allow the exercise of these free speech rights. That part has never been changed. That was approved by the Senate. It's been approved by the other body. But the difference is in the area of reporting. And within the House, or I'm sorry, the Senate committee, an amendment was added that required disclosure of these third-party expenditures. And the framework of the disclosure in the Senate was that the onus fell on the media as well as the person making the expenditure. That portion of the bill was changed completely in the House, and the amendments are quite extensive. But if you were to look at your engrossed copy, other than the bill title, there are no changes until you get to page 4, when virtually all the new language that we added was removed down the hall. And in its place A new section of statute was brought in, which is the area about filing campaign reports. And the essence was that the onerous was put on the person making the expenditure to file a report with the Secretary of State's office. Now, if you look at your report, the conference committee or the concurrence report, you can see that there's new section H added that says, and this is under 2225106, in addition to any other report required by this section, an organization required by 2225110C to report expenditures shall report as follows. It puts a framework on that. And that is the bulk of the amendment. Mr. President, there's a conforming amendment on the next page 4, which would be to bring in statute 2225107, which says where those reports are to be filed, and also add a little C that says any organization making the expenditure pursuant to such and such, which is subject to this subsection, and in excess of $500 shall report the expenditures. So the basics of what happened, Mr. President, is we had a different form of disclosure, and now there's a disclosure requirement that would require it to happen with the Secretary of State's office. I ask that the Senate do concur. First off, we need this bill very badly. Second off, frankly, I think maybe they came up with a better way to do it. I'm not necessarily in favor of disclosure personally, and remember that whole issue was a 15-15 vote in here, or I can't remember if it was 16-14, but it was by one vote. So with that, I've shared it with the sponsor of the previous amendment. Maybe he has some comments, Mr. President. I would say we should concur, and I ask for you to vote yes.
Questions? Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I basically concur. I think the main difference in the reporting, as I understand it, is that with this conference agreement that the reporting is after the date rather than prior to the election. But I think the main and most important part is to see how much funds may be spent in some of these future elections. And if there's any problems or if there's a large amount of funds that raise questions of how they might influence an election, we can address that issue at another time. And so at this time, I would urge you to also vote to adopt the conference committee report.
Senator Bebow?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. Point of order, has it been moved?
Why don't we move this again just to make sure?
I believe it was report number, message number 299 to Senate file 3. I would move that at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Message has been moved. Is there further discussion in regard to message number 299? Senator Rothfuss, would you?
Thank you, Mr. President. As I'm trying to read this in, I'd appreciate it if some of the people who have been working on this a little bit more could tell me. It reads to me that there's no longer a media requirement for the corporation or the sponsor of media, that's the political media, to include their name, which is what candidates obviously have to do, paid for by the committee to blah, blah, blah. Mr. President, it reads to me that that's entirely removed based on this revision, and all we have now is a reporting requirement through the Secretary of State. And, Mr. President, maybe I'm misunderstanding that, so I'm hoping there's some clarification I can get along those lines.
Other discussion before Senator Case responds? Any other discussion at this time? Senator Case, would you like to respond to that?
I need 1 second, Mr. President.
Yes, go ahead.
This is not coming out of my time. Mr. President, I actually cannot answer that, and would hate to represent that I can. I am not seeing it in this bill, but I'm also not seeing it in the remove section. What was removed was lines on your gross bill, page 4, lines 18, continuing on to page 5, and where it says the communications media in using the campaign literature or campaign advertising shall print or announce the name of the candidate. So that is being removed from the bill.
So that no longer will apply. So that specificity is now removed. There was a more generic requirement, and I'm not finding it. So I stand a little bit confused, but the specific reference to who is making the contribution is removed from the bill. And I would, it's okay with me if someone speaks for a second time.
Is anyone else would like to speak to the question? Senator Rossus, go ahead. Maybe we can.
That's the central theme to the reporting requirement in our version of the bill. And if that's lacking in the final version, I would hope that we could get a conference committee to make sure that there is some type of requirement on that. So that would be my preference, Mr. President.
Senator Hines, go ahead.
Mr. President, my understanding that what's removed is a new language, and within the statute that is not included in this bill is the language where we have to have a name on our political advertising, and that would not be removed because we're not deleting that section of the current law. My interpretation then is that as far as putting in an ad, something on the radio, TV, that who's paying for the ad have to continue to be in that ad.
With that, motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 3, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Barnard, Bebout, Burns, Case, Christensen, Coe, Cooper, Dockstader, Driscoll, Emmerich excused, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Hastert, aye to no. Barnard, aye to no. Esquibel, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 16 ayes, 13 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 3. I think I'll wait on the enrolled acts until... Consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a motion for us?
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Esquibel, would you come back to the chair, please?
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 73. The reading clerk will read the House bill. House Bill 73, Dental Services Freedom Bill. and Act Relating to Insurance, sponsored by the Representative Pedersen. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, and Schiffer. No, Senator Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Senator Scott? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate bring to you Dental Services Freedom Bill. This is a bill that was, while may not be a problem yet in Wyoming, it has been a problem in other states, and in particular 37 other states have dealt with this. And what this amounts to is it deals with dental services and the providers of dental services, i.e. dentists, who, when in order to provide services for a particular insurer, the insurer would say, look, you have access to all of these people that we insure, and you will charge rates for the covered items under the insurance, and that's perfectly fine. But then what they do is, in addition to that, they say, and in addition to those non-covered items that we have that you may charge for, in order to have these people with whom you provide services to provide these additional services to, we're also going to tell you that you have to charge certain rates in accordance with whatever they deem appropriate. So basically what this bill does is just basically say, in paragraph A on page 1 and on 2, is that no person or entity contracting with dentists to provide coverage or reimbursement for dental services shall require the dentist to provide service at a fee set by contract, a policy, or certificate, unless the services are covered services. So in essence, what it is basically it's basically telling insurers in Wyoming that you can't force dentists to charge a particular fee for non-covered items. The testimony in committee was that this was by the largest dental insurer in the state, that they hadn't even dreamt of this in Wyoming, that it really doesn't even fit Wyoming. However, that very same insurer in other states has done this. You know, the dentists basically are saying, look, this is, in some respects, I guess, a rationing of health care in some respect. Not by government, but by the insurers themselves. Now, on the other side of the coin, it could be argued, and I know that the good chairman of the committee voted against the bill, is that perhaps this keeps down health care costs. I don't know. But really, what this is about free market, and free market for the dentists with regards to those non-covered items that are not covered by the insurance policy, and would urge your favorable consideration of this bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the bill. Mr. Chairman, this is a bad bill, and let me see if I can explain why. The way price competition potentially works in the dentist market, I mean, nobody calls up, you know, three dentists in the community and say, what's your price for doing my filling? I mean, we just don't ask our professionals price competitive questions with that. We just don't. What some of the insurers, dental insurance companies, have discovered is that if they can get some hungry dentists, they can go around and say, okay, sign up and here's the price schedule for the competitive things, and for the other things that you do for people, here's the price schedule, and we can advertise to people that if you sign up with our dental and you're one of our covered people, this is the price schedule you'll face. And it's apparently started in the East Coast, and where there's more dentists, And it's an effective way to get the dentist to compete on price. And it works. Where you have enough of a surplus of dentists so they're hungry. And they'll compete on price. But what our dentists are saying is, look, we don't want to compete on price. So please make it illegal for some insurance company to come around and essentially force us to compete on price. Now, frankly, I think in many communities, Mr. Chairman, the dentist can tell this insurance company where to go and make it stick and say, no, if that's the way you want to do business with us, we don't want to do business with you. But it's, Mr. Chairman, it's a private sector solution. And what this bill seeks to do is have the government come interfere in the private sector and say, no, this device, because it's an effective way of getting price competition, we aren't going to allow it. And I think that's destructive. I think it's none of the government's business. And I think we'd be better off leaving this one entirely to the private sector and let them work it out. And if they're hungry enough to sign up with one of these insurance companies and compete on price, fine. We'll get cheaper dental care. And if they won't sign up with them, then it won't happen in this state. And leave it to the private sector.
Senator Meyer.
The situation in this regard would be you would have an insurance company that has a monopoly on dental coverage, and they can dictate what the prices are going to be. And so if you leave it to the private sector, you're saying, go for it, boys. You're a monopoly. You can drive prices down so you can drive dentists that won't sign up with you out of business because you're not going to get the covered, and you're not going to get any of the uncovered either because you're the only guy that's going to be left in town because we're the biggest dog on the block.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the dueling senators. I had dental insurance. My dentist sat down and talked with them, and there was things that they would pay so much. And whatever the insurance company wouldn't pay to the dentist rate, he billed me. So does this bill mean that I wouldn't have to pay that? Or, how does that fit?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Senator Ross.
With regard to covered items under insurance policy, and most insurance policies do not cover 100%. So assume that it's an 80%. So you're covered up by your insurance charges or will pay 80% of the bill, there's still that 20% out there. Unless you have some sort of other supplemental coverage or something, you're going to be left with having to pay the additional 20%. Doesn't change anything there. But what I do think is when you look at this bill, if you believe in free markets, then you would vote for this bill. Not some artificial price fixing by an insurance company of all entities. And there is only one real big dog in this hunt in Wyoming. And they came in and testified that they wouldn't even dream of doing it in Wyoming. It's not the Wyoming way. However, they did say they do it elsewhere. So how do you reconcile that? What I suggest to you is that you reconcile it here. Because we control our own insurance code.
Mr. Vice President, Senator Nicholas.
I'm not certain where I'm at on this, but let's take my health insurance. And it's one of the big dogs in the state. And about every 2 years, they have a dispute with the local orthopedic firm. So for about a period of 4 months, the orthopedic firm says, we're not taking any coverage from this group. People start calling them, and all I know is they work out a deal. And ultimately they say, now we're providing coverage for that. But my assumption is that in most instances, the orthopedic firm decides to raise their rates, and the insurance company says, we're not going to pay it. We're not sending our folks to you. And I guess if you happen to be a patient on that day and you've got to go to Cheyenne to get your work up or to Fort Collins, it's not very settling. On the other hand, if you're the patient 2 months later when they've worked it out and the rates came back down because you, in essence, had your insurance company barter to get their rates down, I guess, what's wrong with that? If I hire my insurance company to, in essence, broker lower rates for me because I don't have any power. I have no power at all, but my insurance company does have a power. And frankly, I, as much as I love my orthopods and my dentist, they don't look to me like they're starving.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, that's a good point. But the point is they can do that for their covered items. But what we're talking about is non-covered things. All right. So if the insurance company comes in, this bill doesn't change that. That the insurance company come in and say, for these items that we cover under our insurance, this is what we're going to pay you. Not a problem with that. And they're not complaining about that. What they're saying is they want to dictate things that are not covered on the insurance policy. So I think the example that the good senator from Albany County cited really is not what this bill is addressing, which is those non-covered items.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think if you believe in fair markets, free markets, you vote against this particular bill because then you have the possibility of essentially you're delegating to your insurance company the job of making the dentists compete against each other, and that works. At least it has elsewhere. It may be in Wyoming that the dentists will all hang together and they won't get any, the insurance company comes in, won't get anywhere. But it's been an effective marketing tool elsewhere and an effective tool for getting competition. And I think the monopoly here is afraid that not all their members will stick by the monopoly and somebody will get hungry. And give us some lower rates. So I would urge defeat of the bill.
Any other question being called? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so the favorable recommendation of House Bill 73. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
House Bill 73 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 129. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 129, Nuclear Energy Production Study, and Act Relating to Nuclear Energy, sponsored by Representative Harshman. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, and Rothfuss. Senator Bebout, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Platern. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the whole right report to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 129, Nuclear Energy Production Study, do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'll yield to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Having minor technical issues. There we go. Mr. Chairman, this is a pretty straightforward bill, and what it does essentially is put together a task force, as you can see on page one, on nuclear energy production that is going to be forward-looking and evaluate from the perspective of the state of Wyoming what we can be doing in the future relative to nuclear energy production, kind of with a broad mandate. You can see that effectively all the bill does is create this task force and fund it with a small appropriation that we'll get to. At the bottom of page one, it indicates that we're going to have two members of the Wyoming Senate. Page two, it indicates that we've got two members of the Wyoming House. We've got a further three members appointed by the governor, hopefully with some expertise in energy production, Geological Survey Board, and then a member of the public at large. And then this task force is going to be staffed by the Legislative Service Office. And then the important part, obviously, is what it's going to study. And what it's going to be looking at is the potential incentives to encourage nuclear energy production for the state of Wyoming, the state regulatory provisions, which might be restrictive of nuclear power production. Moving to page 3 and Romanet 3, it looks at the role of local land use planning. On 4 relevant federal statutes that may preempt or limit our authority. On 5, it's looking at storage and reprocessing technologies, including short-term and long-term issues. On 6, it's looking at the role of higher education in the university relative to the development of the nuclear energy production. And then finally, 7 is sort of a blanket statement indicating that they could be looking at other areas that might be of benefit. Moving on to the bottom of page 3, it just asks that this task force submit its recommendations, including any proposed legislation that might be useful or facilitate development by November 1st, 2011, to the Joint Minerals Business and Economic Development Interim Committee. Finally, on page 4, it sunsets the task force December 31st, 2011. And in the F subpoint, it talks about an appropriation of $18,000 to staff the Legislative Service Office and provide legislative members with a sufficient per diem to operate the task force, as well as $8,000 of additional appropriation for the governor's office on their per diem. So, Mr. Chairman, it's a relatively straightforward bill, and I think the key point here is that it's forward-looking and it's trying to evaluate the position that Wyoming is in right now and what our options are for the future as we move forward with nuclear energy. Nuclear energy production represents 20% of our domestic electricity. Wyoming is the main domestic producer of uranium. We don't refine it or process it in the state of Wyoming, but that might be something we could look to in the future. As we look forward with nuclear-related energy technologies, thorium is potentially on the horizon, and we know that in the northeastern part of the state, there's a relatively rich thorium assets that might be able to be viable economically in the future. So this is effectively, Mr. Chairman, a proposal to investigate what our options are moving forward. It's a relatively modest proposal, but we're hoping that this particular task force will be able to come back to the Minerals Business and Economic Development Committee towards the fall and come up with some recommendations on how we might be able to facilitate this production, which is obviously a source of potential economic development for the state of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee. Excuse me, there is a Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. I'd like that read in now, if I may.
Well, House Bill 129, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 12.
Mr. Chairman, this is a relatively simple and straightforward amendment to the bill, and what it does is it includes the University of Wyoming School of Energy Resources and provides a bit of a role for them. They asked to be involved in an advisory capacity if this piece of legislation should move forward, to provide technical and other relevant information as requested. And then they also asked for a brief amendment on page 3, line 11, where we did indicate that there would be an educational aspect to this, or the role of higher education within the state developing nuclear energy production. They asked for a minor rephrasing of that, so as to change it to identifying information and conducting appropriate research necessary to facilitate uranium and nuclear energy production. Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there's going to be any questions or issues on that amendment, but if there's not, I'd call for the question on that, and then I'd be happy after that to answer or address any issues related to the overall piece of legislation.
Mr. Ruffus apparently failed to move the amendment. Would you move the amendment?
My apologies. I thought I had moved the amendment. Mr. Chairman, I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 129 at this time, and then I would call for the question if there isn't any,
any
issues with that amendment.
Any discussions on the amendment? Question being called. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That amendment is passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just a question for clarification.
Am I wired?
You're wired, sir.
I'm feeling wired. Mr. Chairman, is this a replay from the study of a couple of years ago from the Energy Council, and what's the difference from the fine study that they might have done?
Any other questions? Senator Hines.
Floor manager, so I'll ask it to the sponsors. Those of us that was been here two or three, 4 years ago can't remember just the time frame. We was very critical of task force, and we kept asking, why don't you have a committee do it? A committee had the authority to get all this information that these people in the bill can bring us. And so And particularly at a much reduced price and compared to the small appropriation of $27,000. But I just wondered if that was discussed with any of the sponsors, why we don't have a committee of the legislature, a standing committee, do this work, and really they have to come back in if a task force do it and virtually spend a lot of time on it. So I was just wondering if there's any reason why this, the sponsors of this bill felt like that the interim committee could not do it.
Does anybody wish to answer those questions? Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first question goes to the good senator from KC. Not really sure that it's something I guess we'd have to do some research on. I'm not sure that we've done that or not. But I know he's a man with a good mind, so we'll follow up on that and see what we've had out there, Mr. Chairman. As far as the committee doing it versus the task force, that could have probably been done, but I think the idea here was to be able to get to concentrate on this one item just a little bit more rather than we're in a committee situation. We would have cover a lot of many other subjects and maybe not be able to devote the kind of time to this subject that we should. But I could look into both of those questions if it makes it to second reading.
Thank you, Senator Cooper. Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up to the question on the Energy Council, those of us that attended the meeting in Santa Fe in December, nuclear energy was a key topic for our discussion, and I'd be more than happy to research the minutes from that meeting and try to get back to the good senator from KC. I think he's referencing the Energy Council. Is that correct?
Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 129. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? House Bill 129 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 135.
House Bill 135, State Land Improvements 2, an act relating to state land, sponsored by Representative Geer. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural State Public Lands and Water Resources, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
I move that House Bill 135 do pass, and I'll yield to Senator Driscoll to explain the bill.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill deals with improvements on state ground. It's a revenue-neutral bill. What it does is takes improvements on state ground. Past law has been that you were allowed up to $2,000 per section of state ground for improvements without applying to the state board for a permit for them.
Over the years, many leasees have had more than $2,000 per section through many, many years put on these grounds, and there's been a lawsuit or so that has caused problems as far as definition of the law and how it works. And what this law does is goes back in and gives existing leasees a chance to register these improvements on state lands. And what the law says, it creates a new section, 36-5-110A, that basically says that improvements on the sections that have not been registered as provided in Section B of 2000 or more will be allowed a grace period to come in. These improvements had to have been made prior to June 30 of 2010, and you will have until, or leasees will have until June 30 of 2014 to register these improvements. As long as these improvements were not turned down, there's a procedure in the statutes to allow the state land office to turn them down. As long as they have not been turned down, once these are registered, should the lease be revoked or someone do a competing lease, the improvements will be allowed to be brought in at value. I'll read the section to make it a little clearer. Notwithstanding subsection A of this section, the leasee of state lands may register all improvements made upon state lands prior to June 30, 2010, with or without prior approval. So you can do it without approval if you didn't apply for approval. Improvements registered under this section include what you register under this subsection may include improvements for which approval was not applied for pursuant to subsection A. Improvements where permission was denied under subsection A shall not be eligible. And that basically goes through it, and what it allows it to do is leasees will have their full value and rights left for them. This is a great bill. It's a nice cleanup bill. It makes it much easier for the state land office to resolve conflicts either when they take leases away or when there's competing applications. And I would urge favorable consideration on this bill and stand for any questions.
Discussion? Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, a couple of questions about this bill. One is, I guess the improvements that you're referring to would be those related to livestock industries, such as fences, tanks, things like that. And I guess the question is, let's say you put these in, you have not asked permission, you just went ahead and did it, and your lease is taken from you either by, you know, better bid or by whatever reason the state takes it 10 years down the line. Is there any sort of, and this is out of ignorance, is there any sort of provision in statute for the passage of time and the wear and tear on these various improvements that have been made? And the other question I have is, if this is the case, especially the last portion of the new language, why would anybody ask permission for any of these improvements if, from here on, if because right now there's a drop-dead date of 2010, why aren't we, you know, is this setting up a precedent? So say we pass legislation like this again 8 years from now, why would anybody have asked the state land board in the intervening 8 years for permission to do these improvements when just by the precedent we're setting here, they can get reimbursement for them?
Senator Geis.
Does is you register all these, and from now on, any new lease, when you make improvements and they okayed it for you, then that'll be registered in your lease. So in case someone overbids you on your lease, why, then you'll get paid a percentage of your improvements. I mean, there's lots of stock trails and a lot of things put on state lands that cost way more than $2,000, but those are registered already with the state land office, so that over a 10-year period, you'd probably get half of your cost back out of that CREL if someone else outbids you on the lease.
Senator Scott.
As you all know, I've got quite a few state leases in our family operation. Significant improvements on some of them including an irrigation system on one, a stock reservoir, Mr. Chairman, that probably grows in values rather than depreciates, and it's in good working order. And Mr. Chairman, I think I've got a conflict of interest on this bill and would so declare and would ask to be excused from voting just for the specific nature of my operation.
Senator Driscoll.
I'd like to go a little deeper into answering the questions. It goes far beyond ag improvements. There's a lot of state leases that have houses on them. What has happened through the years, example is our ranch, 1800s. State leases have been in the family for five, six generations. They haven't kept up with doing it, sometimes didn't know reporting requirements. So you've got substantial improvements that are there. Sometimes they're worth a lot more money than they were when they were put in. This is a one-time window. This is not going to come back. State lands are going to notify all of the lessees about it. They will put it on the leases from this point on that you have to have prior approval if you're going to be in excess of $2,000 a section. They're not going to forgive you again. These improvements often, as the good senator from Natrona County said, are worth more money. If you put a reservoir in 1950, it might be worth 10 times what it was at today's value. Because when they go in on a contested case, which happened in my county, they bring an appraiser in and they appraise them. And this is how this came about. They had a list that was six pages long. And they were only allowed to get $2,000 per section. The lessee that lost the lease was only allowed to get $2,000 per section compensation. And it left the state in a limbo because it's got all these improvements left on there that the state now has value on the new lease. What they're wanting to do is clean this up, make it where they know what's on the leases. They're actually making the lessees say what's on them and get the value down so we don't have court cases and conflicts. And this is a phenomenal good bill for that.
Any more discussion? Question being called? All those in favor of Senator Guy's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 135. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House Bill 135 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 136.
House Bill 136, Appointments to County Commissioner Vacancy and Act Relating to Vacancies in Office, sponsored by Representative Barbuto. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've moved that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 136, County Commissioner's Vacancy. And for an explanation of the bill, I yield to the good senator from one of those great counties that has the sweetest water known to man.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I bring to you House Bill 136, Appointments to County Commissioners. County Commissioner Vacancy. You might remember several years ago the legislature made changes to the statute on how the seat of a county commissioner who represented a political party at the time they were elected vacated the seat and how it would be filled. Primarily the changes dealt with the timeline on the notifications of vacancy by the remaining commissioners, the amount of time the County Central Committee had to select three candidates, and then the amount of time that the remaining county commissioners had to select and appoint one of the individuals. And you can find that process in the bill starting on page 1, line 9, Wyoming Statute 18.3.534 in subsection A, and starting on page 1, line 1 through line 16 and over on page 2, line 1 through line 12. In Wyoming Statute 18.3.534, paragraph 2, lines 14 through 17, it provides information on the process to fill a vacancy on the county commission when the commissioner that left did not represent a political party. And that paragraph originally read that if the incumbent commissioner did not represent any political party at the time of his election or appointment, the Board of County Commissioners may appoint any qualified person to fill the vacancy. Mr. Chairman, a problem arose December 30th when a county commissioner in Southwest Wyoming resigned. The commissioner did not represent a political party at the time of their election, and the vacating county commissioner's commissioner left a letter of resignation for the outgoing commissioners to read, which they did in the afternoon portion of their meeting, and at which time they accepted the resignation, then appointed a new county commissioner to fill the vacancy as per the statute. A group of Southwest Wyoming citizens complained that under the present statute, the public is denied the opportunity to participate in the selection process and filling a vacancy. What has been proposed with House Bill 136 is to provide a timeline for the commissioners to follow when they are filling a vacancy of a county commissioner's seat when they did not represent a political party at the time they were elected or appointed. And so you'll find in paragraph 2 on page 2, line 16, the deletions of the words may appoint any qualified person to fill the vacancy and replacing it with new language so that the paragraph would now read, if the incumbent commissioner did not represent any political party at the time of his election or appointment, the Board of County Commissioners shall publish in a newspaper of general circulation in the county notice that within 20 days after the publication, any qualified person may make application directly to the county commissioners for appointment to fill the vacancy. Within 20 days after the application deadline, the county commissioners shall fill the vacancy by appointment of one person qualified from those submitting the application. Mr. Chairman, this change will allow the public to participate in the process when there is a need to fill a county commissioner's seat that has been vacated by an individual that did not represent a political party. And with that, I would be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? Discussion? Now, Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, if I'm tracking this right, the county commissioners could make that publication in a newspaper of general circulation the day after they meet, and then the next day they could appoint. Is that how this would work? Or are you actually trying to get to where it's going to be 20 days after the publication? I don't see it being 20 days after the publication, and I'm assuming the application deadline is just the publication itself. I'm trying to figure out when exactly the application deadline is and whether that's clear. And so I need a little help with that, tracking those timelines.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I read this, what it says is that the commissioner shall publish in a newspaper of general circulation in the county notice that within 20 days after publication, any qualified person may make application directly to the county commissioners for appointment to fill the vacancy. And then it goes on to say within 20 days after the application deadline, any time in that period, the county commissioner shall fill the vacancy by appointment. So you're actually looking at potentially a total of 40 days before they would actually appoint.
Any more questions? Discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 136, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 136 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 139.
House Bill 139, Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway, and Act Relating to Highways, sponsored by Representative Bonner. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the committee of the whole rise and report, you do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 139, Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway, and to drive us swiftly down this beautiful road, I yield to the senior senator from Park County, Senator Coe.
Senator Coe.
Rate speeding on it. I know that personally.
It's on.
Members of the Senate, what this does, it takes a section of highway up in Park County that goes from Cody to Powell, known as 14A, which is on the map, and I had someone come to me and they say, 14A, what is that? Well, if you keep going on 14A, you go to Level, and then you go up to Bighorns and come in at Burgess Junction, but that's called 14 Alternate. It would designate this part of the highway from Cody to Powell as the Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway. Now, this comes to you in conjunction with other things that have gone on up there. We created, as you come into Cody by the airport there, if you've seen it, we've created the Veterans Memorial Park. And in that park is the Vietnam Memorial, the Korean War Memorial, and most recently the World War II Memorial. There's now another memorial proposed, I think, is in the appropriations bill right now. So we have that right up there by the airport. Very well done. But there's more history to that than just this. If you take that stretch of highway between Cody and Powell, the history in there is incredible. I would just allude to the fact that this is part of the Heart Mountain Division, which is an irrigation project. And as you go west of Cody through the canyon, you'll see that big pipe that goes across the river there. That's the Heart Mountain Canal. It comes out of the lake on the other side of Cedar Mountain. Roughly 33,000 acres under irrigation with that canal. But the interesting thing about this is that on that stretch, that 31,000 acres, the first drawing, they had a veterans preference drawing out there. First drawing was for World War II veterans, was February 4th of 47, the second January 6th of 48, and the third September 23rd of 49. All total, 215 units were homesteaded by veterans of World War II. As you also, in that same area, there's an area called the Heart Mountain Relocation Camp, which at its time during World War II, with Japanese that were interred there, was about 10,000 population at the time, I think, fourth or fifth biggest city in Wyoming at the time. So you have the history of the veterans out there. You have the history of the Heart Mountain Relocation Camp. All of this would be designated Wyoming Memorial Highway to recognize the veterans and what they've done in conjunction with the memorial there in Cody. That's what the bill does. I would try to answer questions. The Department of Transportation is in favor of it, but it has to be done legislatively. The Veterans Commission came out in support of it. I think it's a good little bill, and I'd ask that you support it.
Questions? Senator Burns.
To Cody, it was an interesting history, and that Heart Mountain area is interesting. But I'm kind of curious as to why it didn't extend, say, at a level or even up to Burgess Junction.
Senator Cole.
You'd be a good senator. I'd like to have call away to Sheridan. I don't know. It could if you stay on the highway. It really came about, I think, a lot of it having to do with the Heart Mountain Relocation Center, because that has been designated a National Historic Site. And as a matter of fact, there's even discussion that the National Park Service might take it on. The feds have appropriated $500,000 for a center out there, a visitor center. I'm not quite sure why we couldn't go further with it. It's just that that corridor seemed to recognize the significance of veterans and history, and being in conjunction with the Memorial Park up there in Cody. So I think that's why we just chose that 24-mile stretch of highway, which, by the way, is almost totally complete now with four lanes.
because of the heavy traffic. I'm not sure I can answer any further than that.
Any other questions? Discussion?
Question.
Question being called? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 139. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House Bill 139 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 151. House Bill 151, Hydropower Development, an act relating to the State Loan and Investment Board, sponsored by Representative Semlich. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State Public Lands and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. You read the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Report. I move that House Bill 151 do pass, and I'll yield to the floor to Senator Cooper to explain the bill.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow Senators, what this House Bill 151 is all about, this is a loan program authorizing loans for hydropower development to municipalities, irrigation districts, and so on. How this came about was, as many of you may well know, the Wyoming Water Development Commission has the authority to do feasibility studies when they're doing water projects for hydropower systems within those facilities that we're building. But the issue becomes is that all they can do, per the statute, is provide feasibility studies. They can't do any of the financing or loans or anything for the hydro facilities. But it's been a proven fact that over the years, these have been pretty successful. For example, this last interim, the Select Water Committee, we went up and visited a facility up outside of the Cody area, it's called in the Midway Irrigation District, actually has a hydro unit there, a small hydro unit on a canal there, that they invested $1.5 million on this hydro unit on this canal, and their return on investment for this is $500,000 a year. It's $500,000 a year return on this facility, and it only runs, you know, a part of the year even. So it's one of the ways that this bill proposes to do is to be able to find a better return on investment for those canal structures that are built and so forth, because they're quite capable of producing hydropower, at least in part of the year. Now, if we look at the bill further on page 1, we look at the new section that's being created, 1134306. And as I mentioned before, I emphasize again, this is a loan program. This is not a grant program. And the only way, as you can see as we work down through this bill, that you can even qualify for one of these is, and we'll get down in the bill a little further on this, is if you're if you have a feasibility study that's been done by the Water Development Commission, says, yes, indeed, this is feasible of doing one of these hydro projects. So the first section there, This all comes under the State Loan Investment Board statutes, as you would find them in the green books. And going over to page 2, it talks about here the purpose for this is the hydro power development. These loans are under section that will require them to be not exceed $10 million. And the term is for 30 years, and that's the repayment period. And the interest rate is to be not less than 4% and not to exceed 6%. And then going on down to line 9 through 11, it talks about the loan application shall be accompanied by this feasibility study, as I mentioned a little bit early on to you, that will be done by the Water Development Commission. Then if we go down to the next section on that page, on starting on line 13 in little c, it says that there will be a 1% fee charged on these loans, and this will be credited to the loss reserve account that's already been established in 1134-202E. And I'll talk a little bit more of that when we get over to page 3, because it tells all about that account and what it does. That's an account that's been in existence for many years now. And then in little d, it talks about where these monies will come from. They will come from the permanent funds of this state, which would have to be, of course, worked out with the Treasurer's Office and with the State and Loan Investment Board. The Board shall require such security. This is an E on this loan. So you'll have to have these loans will all have to be secured by some sort of assets by the people who are borrowing the money. So there is security on them. And if you look up on page 3, section 2, those are just conforming acts that have to be included when you make these changes. And then under definitions there on that page, little a, Romanet 4, this is also a conforming thing that make sure that we include this new statute under the Act. And now we get down to 1134-202 on page 3. And this is where we get into talking about this this account that I mentioned earlier on the other page about the loss reserve account. This language here just tells the fact that, that what this account is for, how it's to be handled in the Treasurer's Office. Like I say, the account does exist already. It's been there for many years. And how that this 1% will be used in case there is a loan loss, that this money will be used to restore the permanent fund that it came out of. So there is a restoration method of doing that. And then also all these little statutes you see in here have to do with refinancing fees. In case it has to be refinanced, it has to do with in case they graze the land, there's grazing fees that goes into these accounts. It has to do with the fact that they have to pay for filing the papers in the courthouse. That all has to be done by the mortgagor. Also talks about foreclosure sales cases. One of those, the money goes back into this account. Into this loss reserve account. And then we go finally over to page 4, and it talks about the fact that if this loss reserve account has greater than 5% of the money that's in the permanent funds, then that will, as we talked about earlier, tip over into the general fund, so that you only have to maintain about 5% of the total funds in that account for loan loss. And that's the bill, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them for you.
Thank you, Senator Cooper. Any questions? Senator Rothfuss.
A question for the sponsor of the bill. How would this be done right now? Are there mechanisms in place? I can see the possibility of bonding. I can see the possibility of going through a bank and securing a loan. That would be the first curiosity I have. And the second one was how the interest rates on page 2, line 7, where it would be between 4% and 6%, how those were arrived at, and any comments on whether that should be flexible over time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rothfuss. Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, it's not being done anymore because the Wyoming Water Development we do not have the money to finance these. There are a lot of good projects out there that would handle it, and they could be handled under the farm loan. I know of, there's about 3 projects up in Park County under the Heart Mountain, that one big siphon. I don't know. It's 1.5-2 miles long. I mean, there's a force that go through that would turn those generators, spin them faster than the bearings could stand it. There's one at Elk Creek. There's a another one up by Matizzi, Lower Sunshine. All those would benefit the communities, pay for the irrigation districts, and help them redevelop a lot of the canal systems that right now the Water Development Commission are funding. And they can take these monies and do their improvements. You get over on the Missouri Valley up in Fremont County. There's a whole bunch of places over there you could put these in. And I don't know about Wheatland and over in there, but I'm sure Goshen County, all those that have plenty of places that if they could get the money to put the systems in, would pay back in about 5 years. That's what the one that we did up there between Cody and Powell, that paid off in 5 years.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a size limit on these? Because there are some small generators that you can put in, like canal flow. And if you have to have the Water Commission do the feasibility study, that would probably kick out a lot of, say, a farming operation that had a canal, but they also had a pivot or something that they could make the power off of the. So, I mean, I'm wondering if the Water Commission feasibility study might get in the way of just going to the SLID and having it approved with your own feasibility study.
Senator Geis.
Well, I think that'd be left up to the district canal districts.
Senator Geis, could you get closer to your microphone?
I think that would be left up to the private canal districts. We all, you know, how they wanted to spend their money, whether they wanted to help the local farmers with their sprinkler systems or all those things, that's strictly up to them. All we're doing is providing the finance to put them in, and then be the canal districts that would be the one that would pay off the note, and then they can spend their money wherever they wanted to spend their money.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just some clarifications on this. Back to the good senator from the land of ivory towers. All these entities are have to be legal entities to go to the State Land and Investment Board, and the same through the Water Development to get the study. So you have to be a legally recognized entity within the state of Wyoming, number one, to be eligible to get the study, and then number two, to be eligible to go to the SLIB board and ask for a loan. And then it gets back to the question of the 4-6% interest. That's established by the State Land Investment Board, those interest rates. So I hope that answers your question, and I'd stand for any other questions on that issue.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sort of have a question along a different line. At one time in a sort of a previous life, I actually had the chance to do an economic feasibility of a proposed small hydroelectric location for a municipality in Wyoming. And at that time, there were private investors that were hoping to partner with the municipality to pay and install for the equipment and, you know, and then share in revenues with the municipality. Is there obstacles to the private sector doing this now? I mean, why do we have to do this necessarily with public funds, especially if the things are as lucrative as the good senator from way up in the top of the western, scenic, beautiful Switzerland of this state might talk about? I mean, that's quite a return. Why do we necessarily have to, our first solution, think that government has to provide these funds when, if it's a good idea, why not allow the private sector, and what are the obstacles to that, and why don't we bring a bill to remove those obstacles rather than have, you know, more government?
Senator Cooper.
Do what we can here. First of all, the question on, you know, how do we do this and, you know, how do we establish the interest rate 4-6% and so forth. If you look in the statutes in Chapter 31 and particularly Article 3, there's a whole section here under the State Loan Investment Board that talks about loans and how they're to be established and how they're to be done. And these are loans. These are loans not to private entities, and so when it came to the size situation before, somebody talked about the good center from the Natrona County, asked about, well, why couldn't we just reduce this down to maybe smaller projects? And you've got to remember, this is geared to things like government entities who are doing this, or irrigation districts or municipalities and things like this. So these are not going to be small, these smaller, tiny projects. This is geared for this. It's also geared for the fact that this feasibility study can easily be done when we're doing these water development projects along with that study that they're already conducting. So this would fit right in with that. And when the question comes to, like maybe why can't they go out and get private loans for these? They might be able to, but this would fit real well because we're already providing funds for these studies and for these projects to be out there, and this is just a continuation of that. And we've already, as a government, providing these funds, and this is a way to help them out and also to get the return on investment, not only for them to pay for their project. The idea is for them to help pay for their project with these hydros, not just for them to make money. It's to make money, all right, but it's also to get the return on investment for what they've done. Trying to think of anything else. I think that covered some of them. I may have missed some, and I apologize, but I tried to get them all down here. So,
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is an intriguing concept, but what would stop private industry from picking up the study that the Water Commission did and then stepping? I mean, how would you have to permit and all that kind of stuff for private industry to take up where maybe it would be easier for government to go in there and do it with some of the permitting?
Senator Guys.
Well, most of these will be on irrigation districts, and they are owned by the farmers and ranchers. I know Bighorn Canal, that is managed by farmers and ranchers. So it is a private entity that is putting these in. They just need the front-end money to get them put in, and then they'll pay off in about 5 years. And then the canal company owns that, and they can use that extra money for repairing their canal systems, which in the other end would free up money out of the water development. We could use that somewhere else. Mr. Chairman, you take a look at that Missouri Valley over there. I mean, there's some big, expensive projects coming up that if we don't take care of them in the next 5 or 10 years, we could lose half of the farm ground over there in that Missouri Valley with one slide out of one of those where the canal goes around some of those hills and things. So it is costly to keep these canals up.
Senator Hicks, did you want to say anything? Senator Meyer.
Along those lines here, a couple years ago when I was on Ag, you know, we talked about earlier that we may have, you know, $200-300 million worth of landfill dollars that we're going to have to expand. We did a study on Ag, and there's almost $900 million worth of repairs out in our irrigation districts because this concrete will only last so long. And this is a way for some of these districts that are going to have tens of millions of dollars worth of repairs that if we can get them into this type of a self-sustaining income-producing venture, then they won't be coming down here for the water development funds. And so I think this is a good way to mitigate some of those future costs that we really don't get an opportunity to talk about too often on this floor because, frankly, they're a little bit larger than we'd like to talk about on this floor, but just replacing the concrete out in some of these places where, you know, concrete will only last 50 or 60 years, and a lot of these projects are getting to their useful life. So I think this is a good little bill as far as private industry stepping in and doing these things. Frankly, they want a lot more than 4 or 6% return. They're looking at more a 20 or 30% return if you're looking at venture capital. And so even though these may be profitable, they're not as profitable as a lot of people in private that have private capital would even entertain because the returns just aren't there to the extent that they'd like to see them.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more concern that was raised that I'm interested in hearing some details about. If these canal districts are actually a conglomerate of private entities, then I assume that they represent a private entity themselves. Now, if we're giving a loan as the state of Wyoming to this private entity to allow them to recoup the costs and repair the canal, that can make some sense to me. But if there's excess profits, Mr. Chairman, I'm curious to know if this bill deals with what would happen to those profits. Are they set aside in a perpetual fund of some sort to maintain the canal district, or would that then be, if it's a private entity, I would assume they would be able to provide that profit as a dividend, and I'm not sure that's consistent with what our intent is, and I'm curious to know whether that would be a realistic scenario. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, it looks like we got three. Let's see. I'm not sure who was first up. We'll go with Senator Hicks.
Concerns. Typically, these don't generate enough electricity to attract a big industrial user to come in here and invest money. So what you're dealing with is with primarily agricultural entities that are land rich and cash poor. So some mechanism to be able to put these things in place is going to have to either go to a bank or go through the state land board to try to get them in place. But what they effectively do is, as the good senator from Goshen County talked about, we have over $1 billion of backlog water-related infrastructure and agriculture in the state of Wyoming. As if you see the ones that are operating currently, like on the Shoshone Heart Mountain Irrigation District, they plow that money back in to that irrigated infrastructure that's aging. A lot of times these were beer reclamation projects that were constructed in the 19-teens. The concrete's rotting. So the demand will always outstrip whatever revenue-generating capacities that these facilities are going to generate. What it does is it alleviates a burden on the districts, but also the state of Wyoming, to have people reoccurring, coming back, asking for additional loans. So it becomes a revenue stream to address this backlog of infrastructure and maintenance needs. So it's really a good thing. I will also tell you there's some legislation moving through Congress right now. One of the big impediments to get these things done in the past is they still had to go through the same permitting processes through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission as a huge hydropower dam or a coal-fired power plant. There's some legislation that's been moving through the Western States Irrigation Districts to get into Congress, what they call low-head hydropower, and that's looking like that may happen, that will free up the ability to actually permit these things and streamline that in a very fast fashion. So what effectively this does is set up a mechanism for the irrigation districts to go borrow a little bit of money to get this infrastructure in place, because it's been the permitting component that's really precluded a lot of this from happening all over the place. But this is really truly green power. And it's a self-funding mechanism to be able to put this money back into these irrigation districts. So it's a good program. I would urge your support for the bill.
Well, we had Senator Cooper and Senator Meyer stand up a few minutes ago. Okay, question being called. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 151, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 151 is passed Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for our consideration is House Bill 193.
House Bill 193, Nursing Care Facility Assessment, an Act Relating to Welfare, sponsored by Representative Childress. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Explain the bill. Mr. Chairman, what this bill is a creative solution to our problem of funding our nursing homes in the Medicaid program. We've heard considerable discussion about that on the floor this time. What this bill is doing is adopting a technique that has worked in many other states. And basically what will happen under this bill is there will be an assessment levied on nursing home beds. I think it does not include the Medicare beds, but it includes Medicaid and the private beds. The assessment will be $11.94 for bed per day. That assessment will then be used to match federal funds. And they'll get back for each Medicaid bed $34.47 a day. And if you want to see the mechanism in the bill, it's on page
5, lines 9 through 18, an account set up, and then the money comes out and is used to match. Mr. Chairman, if it sounds like a shell game, that's because it is a shell game, and the mark is the federal government. And frankly, we've had a very similar program for years for hospitals. It works just fine. It's an assistance, so we don't have to lay out general funds. The federal government, some of the states got carried away in this sort of thing and put on great big, what they call them, provider taxes, used them to finance all kinds of expansions in Medicaid. That got them in trouble, and the feds have set some limits on this. This is well within the limits. I've talked to the regional office people in HHS. They don't seem to have any problems with this, and it's my understanding they don't. It'll be a standard state plan amendment, and we're not anticipating any difficulty. Mr. Chairman, you do need to understand that it is an assessment that will cover the private beds as well. Their charge will go up, but I think it's in their interest to have that happen because it means the nursing homes will be able to afford to do a better job of taking care of all the patients, because all the patients get taken care of about the same. The staff doesn't pay attention to if somebody on Medicaid or they private pay. And it will help have quality in our nursing homes that we can afford. You've heard the testimony. We've been underfunding our nursing homes. This will bring them up on the Medicaid funding to about what it really costs to provide the service. Mr. Chairman, it may not be a permanent solution. The mark is getting restless, and I'm reading rumors of pending congressional action, but I'll believe that when I see it, Mr. Chairman. This will solve our problem for right now without hitting the general fund. I urge its adoption. I'm perfectly happy to take you through the detail mechanics in detail, but I don't perceive the need to do that, so I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 193. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 193 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 203.
House Bill 203, Child Support Orders, an Act Relating to Domestic Relations, sponsored by Representative Lubnow. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Perkins?
I move that when the committee hold rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 203, Child Support Orders. Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'll go ahead and explain the bill. This bill is a fairly simple little bill. There was one that passed through this body a little bit sooner with respect to wards and guardians and conservators. Ultimately, what this bill does is coming back through and trying to take personally identifiable information and make it so it's not disclosed to the public in orders regarding child support. And so ultimately what we have is this can actually potentially appear two places. Sometimes you can be in a situation you have to file support orders in a couple different places. Sometimes those are completely available to the public. And so what we're doing here is preparing or including and making confidential the names, addresses, dates of birth, places of birth, adding that to the Social Security numbers, and also the names and addresses of each party's employers, just keeping that confidential so it's not available to the public. With that, I'll stand for questions, and if there are none, I'll ask for a question on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Discussion? Question being called? All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 203, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 203 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 235.
House Bill 235, Natural Gas Vehicles, an act relating to motor vehicles, sponsored by Representative Roscoe. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, and Schiffer. No, Senator Nutting. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladeren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Nicholas?
Well, we were the first committee on this sucker.
Well, I'm no, I'm sorry. Should we flip? I'm sorry. Senator Schiffer, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I move with the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill Number 235, Natural Gas Vehicles, and to explain this good little bill, I defer to Senator Jennings.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, what this bill does is it wants us to go over to Rollins, build a natural gas fueling station at Wydot's yard over there. Then it wants us to take about 40 cars, vehicles, that will belong to Wydot and to ANI and convert those to where they run on bi-fuel, where they'll run either on natural gas, compressed natural gas, or gasoline. The facility that you need over there will come off of a one of the gas company's mains. It is a compressor, which keeps the pressure up, because each one of these conversion kits, you have to have a tank that will hold about 2,000 pounds pressure in it. And then as you're driving down the road, the car is on natural gas. It's about 200 miles. When you run out of natural gas, it automatically switches over to gasoline, and then you can keep on going until you can come to another natural gas fueling station. Currently, there's natural gas fueling stations in Rock Springs, I believe Evanston, and there's several going up around the Jonah and the Arch area. Some of our natural gas operators in the area, Jonah and Arch area, have already converted their pickups and their fleet. The cars run cleaner, much cleaner, and they run a little cheaper. The equivalent of the natural gas to gasoline will save about a dollar, dollar and a half, depending what the market's doing at that time. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
House Bill 235, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engross copy, page 1, line 2.
Senator Jennings?
I'll move that amendment. I never thought I'd be up here doing a appropriations amendment, but here I go. What appropriations did, and I think it was a good move, is it basically went into the bill and they deleted the fueling station in Rollins. It was a high dollar deal, and it wasn't needed, because these cars, if they're converted, put the kit on there so they can burn natural gas. One of the things that you need is the data to find out how far they go. Do they convert easily? Is there a problem? So that the amendment will take out that fueling station, and it also cuts the number of test vehicles in half from about 40 vehicles to about 20. It's a good move, and what it does is it gives us 20 units out on the road over the interim so that we can look at it and see what they do. Do they really save the state money in the fueling costs? You know, how quick does it take to pay out the conversion kit, which they will, you know, they'll run anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000, depending on how many you do and where you buy them, and will that pay out? So it will give good data, so at the end of the interim, that one of the committees can take a look at the data and decide whether or not this is a recommendation that we should take back to us here and decide whether or not that we want to convert the whole fleet of government, state government cars, or whether we want to can the whole program altogether. So I would ask that you would vote favorably for the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and stand for any questions.
Senator, Mr. Vice President Nicholas.
With respect to this issue, the state of Wyoming is a substantial user of fuel as well as we do have a substantial fleet of vehicles. So when hybrid cars came out, we actually debated whether what percentage of the fleet to put into hybrids and how much should we spend for hybrids. How do we make sure that state employees are safe at the same time? And now the issue is natural gas. And we have a chicken and egg issue, and that is if this turned out to be economical, the same way that we have bulk storage of fuel at our various wide-off facilities, there may become a time where what we'll end up wanting is a fueling pump station at each one of our wide-off facilities. But these fueling pumps to do fast delivery of compressed gas are expensive. And if we were to build our own facilities, we might do a fast or slow fill capacity, and where vehicles would come in overnight and fill up over in the evenings. We're not sure where to go. Because we have such a substantial amount or significant fleet, and our employees are going to be driving these, our recommendation is to have vehicles that use both gasoline and natural gas, because the distance at which the runs will, for the most part, get you from about Cheyenne to Rollins to Rock Springs, it's unlikely that we're going to have vehicles out there that rely solely on natural gas, because the problem is the present technology, natural gas compressed, just requires too large of a tank if you want to go across the state. And it would be too unreliable unless you have vehicles that are going short and back distances. Is one of the reasons why YDOT is considered a good candidate. With respect to the funding, our recommendation is that the funding be controlled by ANI, simply because that's more of what they do, is cross funding between the agencies. So going back to the chicken and egg, there is no refueling facility in Rollins, and if we were in the business, we'd build our own facility, but we're not sure if we should be there. Moreover, if we don't provide part of the demand for it, then the private sector won't get in there. So the idea is, let's build our vehicles. If the private sector will stand up and build the facility, great. And it may be that one day down the future it becomes such a great idea that we'll want to build our own facilities at our wide-off locations, but we're simply not there yet.
Question on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Shivers' motion to amend, to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 235, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment is passed. Senator Jennings.
Left out one important point. There is a fueling station here in Cheyenne, and it's been in operation for, I believe they said, about 20 years, and it runs a fleet of, I think, the trolley. I think I read on something paper the trolleys on natural gas, plus your guys that sell you electricity here have been running their fleet on that for the last 20 years. So that is one, and they take all the major credit cards, so you can fuel up here and take off and skip Rollins and get the rest of them. Ask your support on the bill.
Discussion? Question? Oh, we got another amendment of the whole. Would you read Amendment Number 2?
House Bill 235, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy. Delete the Senate Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Nutting.
Mr. Chairman, when I submitted this amendment, I wasn't aware of the Standing Committee that had already been, the amendment that had already been submitted. So some of this is a little bit duplicative. This also deletes those lines that relate to the fueling station.
Senator Nutting, would you move that amendment, please?
I do. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I move adoption of Committee of the Whole Number 1 to House Bill 235.
It's been moved. Go ahead and continue.
So this also deletes that fueling station. I think it's really important that the state of Wyoming not get into a filling station business or a fueling station business. An additional thing that this does is to also allow the option for purchasing new vehicles if that is more cost effective than retrofitting the vehicles that are there, so that those monies could be used either way, and it returns the amount to $400,000, which was the amount in the original bill for vehicles. So I think those are the main things in this amendment.
Questions, Mr. Dennings? Senator Dennings?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To steal a phrase from the guy in the back row, I stand in opposition to this amendment. Reason being is when you add purchase, if you go look on the internet and you dig through there, there's really one, I can only find one vehicle that comes with gasoline and natural gas. So you'd be restricted from buying from one vendor and their little dinky cars. The other thing is the appropriation. We can get the good amount of data off of 20 units, or if they really shop well for their conversion kits, 20 plus. Another 20 units is not going to give us that much more information. We'll save a little bit of money. So I'd ask you to defeat this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to take the liberty with it. If the sponsor wants, we can divide this amendment up. That will make the two amendments, the one from Committee 2 and this amendment, match. And I'll run through how we do that, or the sponsor may want to withdraw this amendment and bring a second reading amendment, because there's only two differences between the two amendments as I look at them. The first one, Mr. Chairman, for practical purposes, but I want to understand, I'll withdraw if the sponsor wants it withdrawn, and we'll bring it back a second. Division 1 would be lines 22 through 31. That's Division 1. That's saying that you can go buy, if a retrofit doesn't work, you can go buy one. That's one difference that we don't have in the bill right now. The second division is lines 33 through 36. Mr. Chairman, that's $400,000. In the bill as it currently stands, as amended, that number is $200,000. Then, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to suggest that all of the rest of the Committee of the Whole amendment, which we'll designate as 3, we don't need it because it's already been amended in with the Standing Committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, and I'm looking for an approval from...
And before we rule as to whether this is divisible or not, we'll give Senator Nutting an opportunity to...
Okay.
Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, this... Chairman of Committee 2 pointed out that this is more complicated than what it appears. I'll leave it to the sponsor. We could make a mesh with a second reading amendment if you want.
Senator Nutting? Senator, Mr. Vice President, Senator Nicholas.
To authorize purchase of equipment,
is it going to be gasoline and natural gas or only natural gas? Because that makes a huge difference. And if you start doing gasoline and natural gas without a conversion kit, you've actually got a pretty substantial price. And now, if you only do natural gas, you've got a vehicle that, frankly, is not going to is going to have a really limited purpose in Wyoming. And if your purpose is to say, well, let's go out and buy new vehicle fleet vehicles, the testimony that we had was that the you're adding on a $30,000 or $40,000 price on a new car, where a conversion would be about $10,000. So my recommendation is that and my colleague just showed that you know, brand new vehicles at 55 of them are about $1 million, or about $19,000 apiece, I think. So the, and this was in the budget, so we weren't new, brand new to this issue when we came to this hearing. So my recommendation, I mean, we can vote the amendment up or down, but if what you're wanting to do is to say, let's take a look at buying, helping out the auto dealers by buying new vehicles, as opposed to retrofitting them and helping the folks that retrofit these, then we ought to get back and look at what the difference in the cost is, $10,000 versus a brand new vehicle, but and make sure that, and then you also need to specify, or do we want just natural gas vehicles, which are probably the most efficient. And if we go all natural gas, there's no question those vehicles are going to last longer, they're going to be cleaner, but they won't burn gasoline. And then you're going to be limited by a range, so that there are only a few, only people that are really going to check them out are people that are going around town. So we just need to figure out really what your objective is, and we can meet any objective, if that, whatever it is.
Senator Nutting.
Mr. Chairman, I would go ahead and withdraw my amendment at this time and work to make a future reading at the next amendment with both Chairman Schiffer and Nicholas. The information that I had was that the additional cost for a pickup was $10,000, but for like a transit bus, it goes up to $50,000. So that there is quite a variable cost and savings on the different types of transportation. And also the information we were given was that there are more vehicles available that are made for natural gas. So I do withdraw the amendment. Maybe we can get all of this information put together and submit it for the next reading.
Thank you, Senator Nutting. Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has been withdrawn. We're back on the bill, I believe. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 235, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 235 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 242.
House Bill 242, Insurance Surplus Lines, an act relating to insurance, sponsored by Representative Illoway. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 242, Insurance Surplus Lines. And for an explanation of this bill, I'd be happy to yield to me, I guess. This is unfair.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, surplus lines are, I didn't see this one on the board, and I apologize. I apologize to everybody. But, Mr. Chairman, surplus lines are pieces of insurance that we don't necessarily regulate the entire company. And so it's kind of incidental to the purchase of insurance. What generally happens is a company is purchasing a very specialized type of insurance, and I'll just use an example of a ski area, for example, and they might find that that insurance is not available in Wyoming, so they have to go to a surplus lines provider. And this kind of deals with how we're going to collect a fee from that surplus lines, Mr. Chairman. And it's a really a placeholder bill. It fits within the context of federal legislation, which is proposing to have a clearinghouse with regards to all states and how surplus lines are paid. What ends up happening is we get a fee for the writing of this insurance. I believe it's about 4%, but it depends on where the risk is located. It depends on where a lot depends on the definition of what's called the home state of the insurer, which isn't necessarily where the company is located that provides the lines. Mr. Chairman, it might be where the risk is insured. And basically the whole purpose of the bill is to have a placeholder so that we can participate and authorize the Insurance Commissioner of Wyoming to participate in the federal program that's being developed with respect to surplus lines. Now, the other piece that you need to know is that this is an interim topic for your Corporations Committee that we're going to propose to Management Council, because as the federal legislation evolves and as the commissioner works to define Wyoming's participation in this compact and nationwide sharing of the revenues from surplus lines, then indeed we will be bringing refined legislation as we go forward. And I think that's a pretty good explanation of the bill, but it could be a lot better if I would have noticed that this one was on the board.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. As I recall, surplus lines, that's for those particular types of insurance companies that cannot come into our state as an admitted carrier. They're not covered under a guarantee program, and typically what you see with those type of insurance companies are they not like AA rated, if you will, and there's a lot of risk when you go out and buy that insurance from these type of providers. And the risk, and I'm wondering if this affects that risk, because they're certainly not the kind of people that I would buy liability insurance from. And I want to be sure that we're not in any agreement with other states that really provide.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of points on this. Surplus lines are insurance that you buy that's not regulated by the state, that is not available in this state, typically because it's a specialized product. Some of your high-risk recreational areas, some of your oil and gas people sometimes need this kind of insurance. It can be very specialized, and it simply isn't available in our regulated market. It is, you got to go to the regulated market. The federal enactment, which I think is the Dodd-Frank financial bill, included a section on insurance relating to surplus lines. You've heard about it. What happens is that with the federal regulations, if we don't do at least something, we may not be able to collect the premium tax, which we get from surplus lines. And if that happens, your general fund will take about a $2 million hit. So that's what's at stake in this bill. They aren't necessarily high-risk bad companies. They may well be Lloyd's of London. They may well be a subsidiary of an insurance holding company, of a well-known insurance company, but they're dealing in very specialized risks, and they're dealing typically to very sophisticated borrowers. I have seen it in the Med-Mal area where doctors have had a claim or two and our regular admitted carriers won't touch them, and they've had to go to surplus lines and can be very expensive. The use of these is increasing over time, and I don't think we're running extra risks, although you do not have the benefit of the guarantee fund. But again, your purchasers are large
sophisticated outfits, usually. The most unsophisticated ones I've heard of, frankly, have been some of the medical ones that have been forced into it. You heard about the various complications that the federal law is creating and how you've got to have a home state, which may well be in some cases in Wyoming, for these that are not necessarily the state they're located. For instance, if they're using a captive carrier, which they may well be, Vermont is very likely to be the home state, but it's not likely to have the kind of facility that an oil and gas company would have. And the feds have tried to simplify the collection of these premium taxes, and they do simplify it for the large multi-state companies that are buying them, but they do cause some complications for us, and the NAIC is still exploring exactly how you will deal with this. So this will preserve our premium taxes, Mr. Chairman, for the next year or two. Then we're probably going to have some follow-on legislation.
Further discussion? Senator Case?
I'd like to point out that we do have surplus line insurance now, and it's basically the same standards for purchasing surplus lines will apply in the future. It's basically that you can't find it in Wyoming. You have to go to something that's very, very specialized. And it may or may not be a subsidiary or connected with a larger company, but with respect to this particular line, it will be sort of a very specialized type of carrier that is regulated differently in the future and presently. The only real difference is that this bill is that we have to accommodate and give our commissioner the authority to participate in this federal sharing of the taxes that are going to be provided. This bill does that. Otherwise, we don't get the taxes. There's a lot of complication about which state gets what share. And frankly, we're going to learn a lot more about that as we go forward. This bill provides for solving that complication by defining what's a home state and how that works about. But it really just continues under the federal regime what we do currently under the state regime and ensures that we get to keep the taxes, which is probably the most important thing, because the premium taxes flow to the general fund, and it's a considerable amount of money.
For the discussion, Senator Bebock.
The question I want to be sure of is that you mentioned we've had surplus lines in the state for a long time, and we have had, and premium taxes are collected. Now, are they presently being collected? I think the answer is yes, and so the only thing this is going to do is to comply with federal statutes and deal with the sharing of other states to ensure we get our fair share when they go outside our state to get those lines.
Senator Case.
Next time, I hope he explains the bill. He did it very well.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 242, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 242 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 248.
House Bill 248, Unlawful Protesting at a Funeral Amendments, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Representative Byrd. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
House, when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 248, Unlawful Protesting at a Funeral Amendments. And for an explanation of this wonderful bill, I yield to Senator Driscoll.
Senator Driscoll.
This bill merely, I would move for, or I'd ask, thank you, Mr. Chairman, I was unprepared. needless to say, okay? what this bill does is moves the distance from 300 feet to 900 feet for a funeral, and it adds wording that says in the protest picket or breach of peace is directed at the funeral or memorial service. That statement was added because of, for example, across the street here, there's a funeral home close to the Capitol. You could have another protest that's going on that has nothing to do with the funeral, so it has to be directed directly at the funeral. This has been a problem in Wyoming already and much more nationwide. It makes it where it's much easier to keep protesters at a reasonable distance away from them. I would move for approval and stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Driscoll. Question being asked, question being raised. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 248, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House Bill 248 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 249.
House Bill 249, Acceptance of Citation, an act relating to criminal procedure, sponsored by Representative Nicholas. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Perkins?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole citation, with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, I'll explain the bill. What this bill does is try to move citations and their issuance and acceptance into the 21st century. The bill is fairly simple. Right now, anybody who drives a little bit fast in this body probably has had the experience with the five carbonless copy of the citation. So I've heard. And as you know, what you have when you have that, there's the five citations. If you the pink copy that you're supposed to get, and remember, you may or may not be able to read because it's light. There's handwriting, and so what you have, and what this does is kind of move into the 21st century. What the officer would do is in his computer that he's got in the car, he types in the information as he which they do to some degree anyway, as they check for wants and warrants on, which I'm sure that none of us have, and then ultimately this would actually then print out copies of the citation. You would go back, and the officer would hand the alleged offender a copy of the citation, and then the offering and acceptance of that citation then would take the place of actually signing the citation. And in doing that, what you have is, one, it moves, it reduces the paperwork, it reduces probably lost copies. That information is now in the system that then is transported electronically both to the court and to the clerks and around. It obviously would save a significant amount of data entry and up the convenience of the court. And ultimately, at some point, it might even go to the point that maybe they just swipe your card and you pay for it at the same time. I don't know. But anyway, that's what this does. So only what you do is you go through the bill, and each place in the statute where it talks about the written promise to appear or that you have you're accepting the citation by a written signature, what you're doing now is just accepting it by the officer handing you a copy of that. When the officer hands you that and you take it, then that's your acceptance of the citation in lieu of your written promise to appear or your signing the citation. And so all this bill does, if you review it, it goes into each of those places and has it generally the language accepting the citation. With that, that's an explanation of the bill, and I'll stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions, discussion? Senator Cole?
Chairman, I might have a conflict of interest on this, but just a question. What happens if you just refuse to accept it? I mean, you could do that, couldn't you, conceivably? So what happens if you refuse to accept the citation?
Senator Meyer?
Another question here. It's Romanet 2 here. It says, in any other event when the person is issued a traffic citation by a police officer and refuses to give his promise to appear in court by accepting the citation, So I'm just kind of curious that if I accept the citation, but I refuse to give my promise to appear in court, but I can also accept the citation and promise to appear in court. I'm kind of wondering how these two things work here.
Senator Bebout.
One question. Some of these small communities, what if the car doesn't have the computer and the printing mechanism in the vehicle? What do? Do they write it by hand and hand it to him, or do they do blind carbons? Or how would they handle that?
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to a couple of those questions, when you look at the language as proposed, it doesn't define that it's going to be switching over to electronic and computerized. Essentially, the old-fashioned way, when you get that paper, that they come up with that book, they could do the whole thing in their car and just bring your copy up to you. Or with this amendment, it allows for them to do the same thing on a computer, print it out, and hand it to you. And so it's not mandating that there's a computer involved in it. It's really just talking about the signature being your promise to appear. In answer to the senator from the Northwest, the question here, I think, is it's taking away or that requirement for a signature, much like on a civil process. When you receive that notice, you've been served. And it just reduces a little bit of that conflict time. It actually could be an officer safety issue. In the old days, it was, or even today by some standards, if you don't sign it, you're refusing to promise to appear, and some people would look at it as an arrest situation. And this essentially eliminates that. It's a notice, appear, don't appear, but you don't get into that chest thumping on the side of the road.
Further questions? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 249, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? House Bill 249 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Yeah, we did.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 36, do pass. House Bill 39, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 49, do pass amendment. House Bill 73, do pass. House Bill 129, do pass amended. House Bill 135, do pass. House Bill 136, do pass. House Bill 139, do pass. House Bill 151, do pass. House Bill 193 do pass. House Bill 203 do pass. House Bill 235 do pass amended. House Bill 242 do pass. House Bill 248 do pass. And House Bill 249 do pass. Senator Escobel, Chairman.
Senator Escobel.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. That motion is carried. And the report has been adopted. We do have messages from the House.
February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 363, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill 124, National Guard Emergency Deployment Professional Licensing. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 49, excused 11. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 362. Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 23, Mail Ballot Elections. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 48, noes 1, excused 11. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 364, conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 59. The House conferees are Representative Brown, Chairman, Representatives Barbuto and Goggles. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 365. Conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 101. The House conferees are Representatives Teeter, Chairman, Representative Bonner and Green, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
We have a Joint Conference Committee report there. Senator Schiffer, are you ready in regard to Senate message number 276?
Yes, Mr. President.
Would you read that in at this time, please?
Joint Conference Committee report, House Bill 124, National Guard Emergency Deployment Professional Licensing, reference Senate message number 276. Signing for the House, Representative Quarlberg, McKim, and Botten. Senate, signing for the Senate, Senator Schiffer and Landon.
Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I'd move the Conference Committee report for House Bill 124, referencing Senate Message 276. Mr. President, what we did, we met, this is the National Guard Emergency Deployment Professional Training. This is the bill where we set the criteria so that our guardsmen, when they're deployed, particularly in the state, we can allow them to practice whatever skill sets that are needed for their mission. Mr. President, what we did, we went over and visited with the House, and we took out part of the House's language, put all of the Senate's language back in there, and convinced the House it was a good thing, and by golly, it is a good thing. What we did, we went in and eliminated subparagraph E, and we set, and this is on the Conference Committee report, subparagraph D says, if you're licensed with the requirements of the Guard, you've performed all the skill sets that they need for professional mechanical teaching, training, or other skill, you may practice that when you're on state active service status. State active service status means you're either training mission or you've been called up by the governor. In other words, it's the state call-up or state training. That covers the activities of the Guard within the state. Obviously, if they go on a federal deployment, they fall under federal jurisdiction, and that's a whole different ballgame. I think it's a good compromise. I think it enables the Guard to do the training and provide the qualifications and the cross-training that they need that are so important in today's missions for our Guard. I'd be happy to answer questions and ask you to vote aye.
Any questions or comments? Motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on message 276 in reference to House Bill 124, and you've been asked to vote aye. The Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard, Bebelt, Burns, Case, Christensen, Coe, Cooper, Dockstader, Driscoll, Emmerich excused, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer. Nicholas. Nutting. Perkins. Peterson. Ross. Rothfuss. Schiffer. Scott. Von Flatern. President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on message number 276, referencing House Bill 124. We have some signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act 46.
Senate Enrolled Act number 46 being original Senate file 88.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 46, original Senate file 88. And so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 47.
Senate Enrolled Act number 47 being original Senate file 89.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 47, original Senate file 89. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 48.
Senate Enrolled Act number 48 being original Senate file 3.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 48, original Senate file 3. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 49.
Senate Enrolled Act number 49 being original Senate file 23.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 49, original Senate file 23. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning, February 23rd.
Are there any announcements, Senator Coe?
Yes, Mr. President. Your committee number 4, members of the Education Committee, we will meet on adjournment Thursday, the 24th, over in House Education to talk about interim topics with the other side. And one other announcement, if I could, Mr. President. For those on the conference committee for Senate File 101, Coe Jennings and Rothfuss, we're going to meet tomorrow morning at 8:30 in my office, in my committee room over here.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 1 judiciary will meet Wednesday, February the 23rd at 7:30 a.m. in contemplation of our gaveling in at 9:30. We'll meet at 7:30 a.m. in room S1 to consider the following bills, which is the last four that we have. House Bill 92, impersonation through electronic means. House Bill 189, foreclosure and redemption revisions. House Bill 167, Castle Doctrine modifications. House Bill 141, governmental immunity waiver for hospital employees. Thank you, Mr. President.
Other announcements, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Transportation Committee will meet on Wednesday, February 23rd. That's tomorrow. 10 minutes after adjournment up in S-14 to take up House Bill 194 engrossed, next of kin driver's license option, House Bill 207 engrossed, protection of activities in private vehicles. And, Mr. President, your Transportation Committee will meet on Thursday upon adjournment over in House Bill 17 for the discussion of interim topics.
Other announcements, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate Appropriations Committee will meet after adjournment first in the President's office. We'll be talked to. Then we'll meet to up in our regular committee meeting room after that meeting to consider House Bill 23 engrossed sex offender registration amendments, House Bill 215 engrossed Department of Health reorganization. And then the conference committee may meet this evening, but things are changing, so we're not sure when the conference committee on the budget is going to meet. We'll know a little bit here in a while.
Senator Beadout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will be meeting Thursday, February 24th, upon adjournment in room H-18 with the House committee to discuss joint interim topics.
Other announcements? Seeing none, Senators, I would remind you that this morning you received a draft copy with a number in the corner. I would encourage you to put those up on the corner of your desk. Those will be picked up later. You'll get an updated copy either later today or in the morning. So just put those numbered copies up. Pages will pick those up and take the appropriate action. Other announcements? Evidently not. Yeah, you've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. You have heard the motion. We would stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning, February 23rd. We are adjourned.